For June the 15th, 2018, we talk about some general E3 news, Realm Royale, and we do some free play multiplayer cleanup. Welcome to Level 245. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Now, Jolly, you cannot be evasive on this because you're on the air. What is Wild Water? I asked. So, you know, usually before we start recording or come back from break, I ask if everybody's bevved up, if they have stuff to drink. That's kind of one of the common causes for needing to take a break. And Jolly said, I have Wild Water.
Well, here's the thing. Well, first off, given the fact that most of the people, when you say that, are you bevved up? They're talking about like whatever alcohol that they've got going.
Right.
Like I've got the real exciting, like, ice water with noon fizzy tab in it, which is like basically caffeine and like vitamins and shit.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, like that's all. It's a fizzy colored water with some stuff in it to keep me going because it will be a long talking time.
Yes. Yeah. Keep the brightness in your eyes. Okay. Now I've got just a half liter of water here. It's just my usual thing. Yeah. But people are not tuning in to hear what we have to drink. I just wanted to corner you on air about that because I was curious. Yeah, this is going to be a weird episode because of our recording schedule. We record on Monday nights. We're in the middle of E3. So we're not going to have, I guess, I don't want to do a complete E3 look because that would just be terrible. That would be too much, but we haven't seen everything yet. So people are going to say, oh my God, that thing happened at Sony. Why didn't they talk about that? Sony is happening while we record.
Yeah. And then Nintendo's tomorrow. So like, we only got up through Ubisoft. So
PC gaming ended right before we started.
Yeah. Actually. Yeah. Well, I didn't even look at that.
Oh, I missed PC gaming. So, did they show any new XCOM?
No new XCOM.
Okay, then I don't care.
nothing from Firaxis, unfortunately. There was some cool stuff at Indie. It was neat. Not Indie. PC. I equate the two.
Yeah, no, for sure.
Yeah,
I saw they put XCOM 2 on PlayStation Plus, and that's like my indicator that is now old hat, and there's something new coming. So I halfway suspected, but whatevs.
Yeah, but stuff outside of E3 is happening. I want to do the usual banter at the start. Jala, what's going on?
I get picked first because I usually have shit going, I guess. I don't know. I did a lot of stuff over the weekend, but it was all related to charity stuff and workout stuff. Like my running group is just now beginning their social runs leading up to marathon season because that's about to start up in another month. And so I went for my first run in a long while, chit-chatting to a new person. And otherwise, just kind of like, you know, like I did a workshop for belly dance on stage presence. So that was fun. And I don't know, stuff. I've been busy doing things.
Yeah.
That's what cool. Presents did they give you?
You're so funny. That was real lame, dude. Like, come on.
I'm getting better at this dad joke thing.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, seriously, like, you didn't quite get me to facepalm, though. You're not really, like, you're not on Phil's level yet.
I gotta keep practicing.
Just, like, he just starts typing, and I'm already facepalming before he finishes typing whatever it
is. It's a very, very carefully cultivated persona there. Hi, Phil.
Dennis.
We love Phil.
Dennis, you were away last time. What have you been up to?
Oh, just the usual craziness. So nothing too special. I do want to visit on what I am drinking because it is especially special.
Oh, you felt left out.
It's called Contradiction by Smooth Ambler. It's a whiskey. And it is delicious. It is a blended whiskey. Which used to mean that, you know, they had some like generic grain alcohol crap in there, but now it's actually like blended whiskeys, and that means it tastes really good.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's what I've got going on right now. Otherwise, it's just life as usual, which is all kinds of crazy adventures. So,
well, I haven't heard any like blenders or crazy banging in the background. So, I mean, things must be quiet in the House of Furia tonight.
We kind of did the full court press to get the kids to bed and all that.
Nice.
Set tonight, so feeling pretty good about that.
Yeah, I didn't look to see if there was any reaction. Did anybody say anything about our, let's say, audio play that we ran last week?
So I listened to it and was dying laughing, and that's all that matters. So
we recorded some stuff. I recorded stuff with Gary today. Mondays are always big recording days, very long days. And he had construction happening in both of his neighbors on both sides, and his window is broken.
Oh no!
So stuck open. So keep your ear out for that coming up pretty soon. It was unavoidable and very funny.
He always one-ups. Jeez.
it's hilarious because you can hear, I mean, to me, because I'm a monster, it's hilarious to hear just how worried the other person is that stuff is coming through. Oh no.
It's like,
could
a,
you
what
tell
was
his
it, a
muting
quiet
habit?
Place, or...
Could you tell his muting habits as well?
He doesn't mute.
All right.
Oh, okay. I give so zero goods.
Yeah. What's funny though is I was listening to the Abject Suffering of Shower with Your Dad Simulator, and I'm like, I played that and talked about that. Mm-hmm. That was a thing.
That's
I remember that game.
That's
thank
a fun
you,
game.
Sam.
Yeah.
Well, I had even said as much. I had said, you know, this game isn't a bad game. It's just like, what the hell?
I had forgotten. You were ahead of the curve.
Yes, I was.
I don't really
thanks
have...
to Sam. Yeah. Like I would never I probably would have come across it and been like, what is this, and bought it, but Sam got it for me before that.
For some reason I had it, which is something really weird when a PC game comes up on Abject Suffering. Is like, I'll just do a search on Steam and it'll say, you already own this. Okay.
Perhaps you bought it after I talked about it.
That's possible.
I don't know why else you would have one.
The only thing I could think of would be a bundle, possibly.
But you have to activate those, right?
Yeah. But I activate those wholesale. The ones that I don't already own. Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
You know, it's like one of the close up magicians. It's like, was the card in the pocket the whole time? It's like, I don't know how to react because, like, okay, that's great, but I'm also not going to be like, what?
Convenient. It is very possible that I just bought it and downloaded it when you talked about it, Jala, because it's a very inexpensive game.
Well, you know, like, there are times that I just like chalk up games that are in my Steam library to a bundle, and I have no idea where they came from. Like, I really have no recollection of ever even activating a code. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, they just kind of like, I swear stuff just kind of manifests in there that I'm like, I've never seen this title before, and I have no knowledge of what this game is at all. Why is it in my library? So, I don't know.
Yeah. What are you up to, Ben?
I had a friend from grad school come in town over the weekend, so I got to show him around Austin, kind of go out to the typical places, so that was a lot of fun. And then I played a lot of a game that we're going to talk about later altogether. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we've announced it or not, but yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Everybody keep your eyes peeled for that. I don't want to talk in great length about what we're going to be talking about, but that is for later. Not very much later, but still for later. So do you have your like Austin hosting routine down? Like,
yeah, I have my spots that I take people to. try and take them to Elephant Room Thursday night for like free jazz music. Go to Valentina's at some point. Go to Easy Tiger, ABGB. Yeah.
Nice.
All these places that you mentioned to me that just were not convenient to the time I was in Austin.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You can attest. When you ask for things to do, those were all on the list. So.
Well, I was just like, hey, dude. Oh, I forgot to tell you, I'm also here. And it's like, oh, well, you know, and where can we meet? Well, there's these places. So.
Yeah. Neat. Yeah, I have been very busy doing stuff that is not conducive to talking about as anecdotes on this show. So
yeah.
I am thankful that all of your lives are rich with incident. So we've got some stuff to do. We have all the usual segments tonight. the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
The Brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. While we are not doing like a full E3 recap right now, I see at least two of our stories are from that, related to announcements that happened.
I wrote like general notes about all the different announcements that were made thus far, so I can just talk about whatever around everything else you guys talk about.
Yeah. So what I thought was, we could all talk about one thing that has been announced so far that we're excited about. Mm-hmm. And Ben, you've got something that is, that was one of the bigger surprises to me. Tell me about Cyberpunk.
Yeah, so we've talked about this before, that the company that made The Witcher 3, CD Projekt Red, they, I forget when, I think it's like maybe 7 years ago or so, they announced a long time ago that the game they were going to do after The Witcher was Cyberpunk 2077, I think they gave the title, but it was just alluded that it was going to be like a futuristic cyberpunk themed game. That was kind of hard to picture given their games prior to that being The Witcher, but man, does it look really good. They dropped a trailer for it at E3. And it's like basically like the same amount of creativity that they put into the like monsters that they had in the Witcher fights is just like exploding all over the place with like Blade Runner type charm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. The trailer is like 3 to 4 minutes long, but like every scene is just like a completely like sweet science fiction idea, like a bank heist with a bunch of robots, a model with like interchangeable face parts. Yeah. It looks really cool.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this. It's hard to react to anything beyond the aesthetics just because all we have is a trailer so far. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm so excited to see a cyberpunk thing that is not like straight up Blade Runner in terms of visuals. Like, you know, this is not dark and rainy. Like, this is colorful and like punky, you know, like it leans into the punk side of things. Like, I'm super excited about it. I just don't have any hope that it's going to release this decade.
Yeah, there's a Polygon article that they wrote where there's like text in either like one of the E3 presentations or like in the trailer, and it was like a note, like a long note that the company had written to the fans, and it was saying something along the lines of like, we'll finish it when it's like done, like we're gonna do it as like a quality based thing. Which I'm totally fine with, but yeah, that could be a thing where it might not be out for a while. But the fact that they released the trailer is probably a good sign that, that you know, it's pretty far along. But it sounds like they're from the announcement that they made, it's like it sounds like it's going to be the same format as The Witcher, where there's going to be free DLC. There's not going to be any like in-game purchases, RPG, single player. So yeah, looks really cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm jazzed about it. Mm-hmm. Dennis or Jala, do you have any thoughts on Cyberpunk?
So I take it with a grain of salt because I watched the trailer silenced on a tiny cell phone, so maybe I didn't get the full experience. But after the first trailer for this game, which was so atmospheric and very much leaned into like the Blade Runner kind of darker, more melancholy side of this genre, seeing this trailer was a little bit jarring for me. And I felt like they took what they had with the original one and injected a bunch of Borderlands into it.
Hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah, so my reaction was like mixed because there, you know, there's a lot of great ideas there and it does, you know, it still looks damn cool. But it, you know, I was almost expecting Deus Ex vibes and got GTA vibes instead.
Yeah.
And so it's, you know, it's not a bad thing. It's just different than I was expecting.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it actually.
Yeah. So I'm just, you know, I don't want to come down on it. I don't want to be down on it.
Yeah.
I just need to, I'm in the process of rejiggering my expectations so that I can get hyped for it.
Yeah. It was a zag after a zig.
Yep. Yes. Yeah. Which, you know, that doesn't mean the game can't have the stuff from the original trailer too. So,
yeah.
It seems to be a pretty big experience. Like there's a lot to this game. So maybe it can deliver both. I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jala?
No, I don't really have much else to say. I think Dennis covered it.
What were you going to say, Ben?
The protagonist, like in The Witcher, does seem to be pretty flat, maybe from the trailer. But hopefully that's not the case. Like, hopefully there's more depth. But
Yeah, they don't have the excuse of the Witcher mutations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they could easily say he's a robot.
Yeah. He has cybertized the personality parts of his brain. I'll do mine because I don't know how much there is to say about it. I was just very pleasantly surprised at the Devolver show, that press conference, that wacky Adult Swim kind of thing. I was very excited to see that and the PC gaming show, just because that's where you see the smaller stuff and the weirder stuff. And you don't get much weirder, and you do get much smaller, but you don't get much weirder than the fact that Devolver is publishing Metal Wolf Chaos. History background on this, although everybody listening probably knows about Metal Wolf Chaos because of From Software and its reputation. Back in 2004, From Software made an Xbox game called Metal Wolf Chaos. You play as the president piloting a mech in order to save America. Has a very campy, over-the-top kind of feel to it. Think something similar to like Metal Gear Rising Revengeance almost, right? Mm-hmm. Never came to America, even though the voice acting is in English. It was never localized, and the fact that it is solely on the original Xbox, was never made backward compatible, makes it very difficult to play this game. So it was kind of like lost to history a little bit. People have modded it, run it on modded Xboxes and stuff. But the fact that this is just straight up coming to PC in high def with English text means that like we can finally do this on WAF. Which nice. we have wanted it to do for a while, but has been logistically very difficult to do. My only hang up about this, and I am being a parody of myself, but I hope people understand, the URL that they have for the game is is Mech America Great Again, mm-hmm. which is clever, but I don't want to associate that with my video game.
I give it a thumbs up. I laugh.
it's clever on the surface, but I'm just not down with anything related to the current occupant of that office, let's say. Mm-hmm. So, but regardless, it is going to be cool to be able to play this. I've wanted to play this for a long time, and Devolver's making it happen.
What does the XD stand for?
I don't know.
All right, we'll find out.
For stop asking questions. Or no, you know what? It's like the squinty smiley face.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that what? What do you call that? What specific emoji is that? The squee emoji?
I don't know. I've seen the XD suffix used elsewhere, but I've never been outside of the Cinemark XD expanded definition experience. I have no idea. Yeah, it sounds like you're looking it up, Ben.
I am not.
Oh,
so, I am.
Okay.
Somebody's got some rap tap tapping going on, yeah. That's for sure.
Laughing face. Nothing helpful.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of definitions for XD.
Jala, what have you got for us?
Well, what's interesting is that although I am not like the Fallout player, like not like I've been avoiding it specifically for a reason, just like I just am not, I don't play that series. Uh-huh. I watched the Fallout 76 trailer and all of the extra stuff about it. And I figured one of you guys would talk about it, and then nobody did. So, yeah, it's supposed to be a prequel 4 times larger even than Fallout 4, which I've heard is quite large. Mm-hmm. And basically you are the first to leave the vault. And it has new rendering, lighting, and landscaping tech in 16 times the weather systems. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to incorporate West Virginia folklore into the mutants that you come across, which I think is interesting. And it's 6 different regions of the state that you get to go through, which will feel distinct from each other rather than just being gross and barren wasteland. Like, it looks really pretty, and it looks quite different from other Fallout games insofar as what I've seen of them. It's supposed to be playable both online and solo, and that being the case, I may very well play this online with people. It's described as being a softcore survival game, and as for the online portion, they say that you will never see servers at all. There will be dozens, not hundreds of people per server. You build settlements wherever and move them wherever. You can control nuclear silos, including like using them to attack neighbors. There's supposed to be a special edition that will have a glow in the dark map, and Power Armor. There isn't a release date announced so far, but usually when Bethesda...
let's not glaze over that. They're giving you a set of power armor?
A helmet. It's a helmet. Power.
So, yeah. But anyway, there isn't a release date announced so far, but usually when Bethesda announces something mid-year at E3, they end up releasing it in the fall. No. So chances are we will probably see it in the fall, although that's not confirmed. So, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a thing. It looks really good. It looks interesting, and it caught my eye more than all the other stuff I was looking at, except for maybe Assassin's Creed Odyssey, which also looked kind of interesting, but I don't know what Assassin's Creed is even about anymore.
Yeah.
It's about trying to make money.
I mean, like, it's real pretty, but that isn't... Yeah. I mean, they say that there's going to be sailing, horseback riding, and swimming, and we know that I don't like some of those things already in games, so, like, you know, I don't know how excited I am to play it, but I'd watch somebody else play it.
Yeah. I heard very good things about Origins, the one set in Egypt. Like, it seems like that ship is at least righted. The fact that they've taken time off is good. Jala, this says more about the people that I associate with than I think the statement I'm about to make, but you're the first person I've heard who has been positive about the idea that Fallout is going to be heading online with 76.
Well, that's because you already know that I'm an interactive human being, and if you tell me there's going to be this game that I'm going to have to be sitting out sweating my ass off in my office to go play because I have no insulation in my office, you know, and it's 115 degrees in the sun and there's no shade around my office, like, okay, if I'm going to be in a hot box to play this, I better have some company. If I don't have some kind of company or some kind of, you know, interactivity with something other than just this game itself, I'm not going to want to sit out there and play it.
Yeah.
But like, if it's got interactive elements where I have potentially have friends or other people doing stuff, then yeah, I might be more interested in playing it that way.
Yeah. I have reservations about the onlineness that are mostly related to the, you know, what that's probably going to do for the quest structure. Like, I really enjoy Fallout as a solitary experience.
Well, the thing is like, they say that you can do it one way or the other. You don't necessarily have to even participate in the online portion at all. You can boot it up and play it solo. So if you want to be like a sad bastard in your own room doing your thing, you can totally do that.
Yeah. What I mean by the quest structure idea is, like, if it is designed primarily for online, if that is the game that they have decided to make, what you're going to lose are the kind of narrative hooks.
Well, what I'm interested in is, like, what is it that they are trying to, like, are they just putting everybody in the same area and just seeing what happens, or are there going to be specifically designed, you know, multiplayer segments that have like special quests or something? They may not even have quests. It may just be like, all these people are here and you can attack each other or whatever.
Yeah. That's what I'm worried about is if it is just as wide open as that. I like a little bit.
I have no idea, but you know, like, if it's an option, then you can turn it off.
Yeah.
I feel like someone describing the Dark Souls invasion mechanic to you before you played it would have gotten you to say a very similar thing, though. Like, I don't want that in my video game.
Yeah, that's why I have reservations, as opposed to, like, this is bullshit. I just don't know. Like, I, you know, they spent a lot of time at the Bethesda show talking about this game and showing little trailers and vignettes in the Vault-Tec style, but just... I still don't know what the rhythm of this game is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I am in love with the idea that it is going to be set in Appalachia. Like, that is
cool.
That is a cool and good idea.
Redeem Far Cry 5.
And if there is the option to just go down the AT, like the Appalachian Trail, you know what I'm going to be doing and not paying attention to anything.
Jala's wearing a ruck. There wasn't supposed to be a ruck in the game. What the hell?
She modded one in. Ben, you've been pretty quiet. I want to hear how you reacted to the 76 details.
I actually didn't hear a lot about it, so all this is kind of news to me.
Okay.
I was going to mention if we could, like, brief sentences of other things, but that kind of breaks the rule of only mentioning one thing. But
I'm not going to like disconnect the call. Like, what do you want to say?
Yeah.
I'm just really excited. I'm also excited about Respawn Entertainment making a Star Wars game, but it's, since it's going to be under EA, they have recently canceled other Star Wars games, so
yeah,
it could be misplaced hope.
Yeah,
and then there's a new Elder Scrolls game too, and who knows
how that is. But it's supposed to be online or on the mobile, and it's got three modes, one of which is the Abyss, which is a roguelike endless dungeon, one which is Arena, you know, the versus mode, and then the other one is the Town, which has been compared to Fallout Shelter.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in that. So I was like,
I think you're missing the big Elder Scrolls mobile news, which segues into my story.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's do that.
Yeah, so the other Elder Scrolls mobile thing they announced is Skyrim Very Special Edition. And it is a pure voice interaction version that's meant to be played on Alexa or with Siri or choose your robotic smart device voice that mishears you 70% of the time.
But the idea is very good. Come on.
They're pretty good. Although I keep on asking Alexa to play The Head and the Heart, and then she goes, playing The Head and the Heart Holiday.
Mm.
I'm like, no, just The Head and the Heart and Holiday. So she's stuck on The Head and the Heart for Christmas, I guess. Mm. Anyway, that tangent aside, Skyrim Very Special Edition, you boot it up on Alexa, and then Zork style, or, you know, choose your adventure game style. You start getting narrated a scene and are asked to choose directions to go or what to interact with and decisions to make, etc. And at first it looked like kind of an April Fool's style, just kind of jokey video. And then people slowly realized that this is very much a real thing.
Oh, wait a minute. So I was going to ask if you knew it was joking, but you do have information that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes, it is a real game. And downloadable for free. So I will be trying it and might talk about it on a future show because I can't remember if we've talked about this in or on the podcast before, but my $1 million idea is interactive choose your own adventure or any kind of games,
mm-hmm.
Designed to be played with car Bluetooth while you're traveling. So right now everyone listens to podcasts or has conversations on the phone or what have you.
Uh-huh.
Why not be able to play games while you're driving? Just video games minus the video. And so this game kind of is a nice little proof of concept that I can see if that's actually any fun.
I was 100% certain this was a joke.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I think
it's
everyone
just
was.
Because. Well, that's because everybody has made the joke Skyrim soon to be coming to what are they going to release it on now?
Mm-hmm. It's weird to see that joke being made by somebody who has the power to make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also the fact that they had Keegan-Michael Key star in the trailer for it. I thought it was just a skit. Huh.
You could not scream louder that this is a skit, and I have to imagine that was very intentional. It just leaned into it, and it's better for it. So who knows if it's actually any good, but like I said, I'll be trying it.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of excited because this is in a way to interact with interactive media that I haven't seen in a big way before.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to try it too. Mm-hmm. Now that I know it's an actual thing. Something
I don't have robotic devices. I mean, I suppose I could, if it's bootable on my phone, I guess I could do it that way.
Yep, it is not just an Echo.
Yeah.
It is anything.
Yeah, your phone connects.
I don't even have it turned on to where I can use the robot voice. I literally don't even use that.
Yeah.
I would have to go out of my way to get it to work.
Yeah, the link that Dennis posted and that I'll put in the notes gives instructions for that.
I just imagine, do you have an iOS or an Android device, Jala?
Yeah, I have an iPhone. You know that.
I just imagine Jala walking up to her iPhone and being like, "All right, you're allowed to come back from the hell prison that I banished you to."
Yeah.
You have no mouth, and you must.
Yes, I watched you a little bit playing that, and then I was like, you know, these characters talk way too much. I can't take this. I gotta go.
That is very funny.
So I wonder with this format if you'll be able to scream draconic phrases to do your attacks.
That was one of the gags in the video.
Oh
yeah.
So I wonder if that's the case. Huh. Yeah, I'm just gobsmacked.
Should I know who Brian Gilbert and Tara Long are? They were the ones who demoed it, essentially.
I don't know.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I noticed was just a trend between that we just talked about right now, you know, Bethesda joking about just the proliferation of Skyrim special editions, and then also with every single show featuring jokes about how many battle royale games there are. I don't remember a time in the past where there were so many jokes made about phenomena that should be worrying, and I don't know why you're joking about them. It's like, you understand that people are annoyed about the Skyrim special editions for a reason, right? You want, like, if you're making a joke about how many battle royale games there are, why are there so many battle royale games?
I would read it differently. I would say that video games has gotten to the point where it finally feels comfortable, like, laughing at itself.
Okay.
Whereas before, and it's probably been there for a while, but it was before, there's almost this, like, you know, the worry about legitimacy and feeling like you got to be either hardcore or show how adult you are. Mm-hmm. And now it's everyone's just kind of relaxed a little bit and is able to laugh about it.
Yeah. Okay. I could believe that. I just watch that stuff happen, and it's like, yeah, you're joking about it, but are you going to do anything about it?
Yeah. It's like, okay, there's a lot of battle royale games. Haha, that's great. Maybe do one that's, like, slightly different than everything else on the market.
And there's usually, like, a one-sentence description about how many of these are, you know, different than just PUBG or Fortnite, right? It was just
something... Spoiler, I will be talking about two battle royale games this week. So.
Oh, cool. Fun.
That's okay. I've got non-battle royale games. We'll even it out for you.
Yeah. So that seems like it's the brief to me. Do we have any final words, stray observations, things like that?
Mm-mm. LOL, Square Enix did not even mention Final Fantasy VII that I saw.
Square Enix's presentation was very strange.
Yeah.
It was mostly, mostly trailers that we saw elsewhere, and it was only like, what, a half hour long? It was weird. And I expected different. But
too busy counting their money from Brave Exvius.
I suppose that's
anticipating their money from that $230 special edition of Kingdom Hearts 3 they've got on their site right now.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where usually we ask you a question and then you answer. However, because this is kind of a strange week and any E3 related prompts, or, you know, prompts about new things coming out would have been premature, we are going to kind of punt a little bit and do a little bit of multiplayer free play cleanup. Some of the ones that I'm going to bring up are from a while ago, like 2016, but I didn't lie to you. I've kept these. So
see, we need to do some of these every once in a while, because we need to catch back up again a little bit.
The podcaster never forgets.
We don't need a backlog of free play questions.
I frequently forget. So OMG Amoose asks a question here. Do you all have a game that you enjoy, even though it's of a genre you don't normally play or enjoy?
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'll do my answer, and this is kind of a shamefully basic answer. I will enjoy a football game from time to time, and NFL 2K5, I think, still is an amazing football game to play. Still, you know, like, even though it was released for $20 back in 2004. it's a very fun, fast football game. I remember having not so much an argument, but just a disagreement with somebody, because, like, I was when I was working at the game store, and, you know, I was talking this game up, hyping it. I said the sentence, I don't even like sports games, and this is a game that I enjoy, that this is really good. Somebody I work with said, you couldn't have done a worse job of selling that game, because you're making it sound like it's a bad sports game because you don't like it. Like, no, like, I hope it's clear that I'm saying this is a good game, even for what it is, right?
Yeah, no, I follow you. I followed your logic. I think that was a ringing endorsement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know.
So I've got one. which is Trackmania Turbo.
Oh, right, yeah.
It is the racing game. I think I talked about it a couple weeks ago. And I've never been super duper into racing games, especially ones as brutal as this, because this is it's very much a game where you have to learn the track and know every little nuance of every little corner. And I think when I talked about it, I had worried that the tracks were going to get longer and less bite size, and they certainly have. But I've kept on playing. Like, it feels good to master a new track. And even though that takes time and focus, like just knowing exactly the angle you need to hit a turn on, or knowing exactly how fast you need to be going over a jump to land in the window you want to, it feels good in Trackmania for some reason in a way that it hasn't in other racing games for me, mm-hmm. which has kept me coming back.
Nice. That's a good answer. Ben, how about you?
I think I'll double down on the racing one and say Burnout 2 Paradise. But that's because it was more like a puzzle game than it was a racing game.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Doing
Burnout.
Wait,
was it Burnout 2 Paradise or just Burnout Paradise?
Was there a Burnout 2 Paradise? This was like back in 2005, whichever one that one was. Mm,
maybe Burnout 3 Takedown.
All of it is wrong.
One of these.
A Burnout game.
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. One of the Burnouts. No, I know what you're talking about. Like whichever one introduced the crash mode where it's like maximize the damage.
Yeah.
That might have been too. Paradise was a different thing.
And you have like a secondary explode or whatever.
Yep.
That has not aged well, maybe. But yeah.
Jala, how about you?
Well, if I want to go with a racing game too, since that seems to be the thing, like that wasn't my initial thought. I'll tell you what my initial thought was, but I'll just say like the Star Wars Pod Racer. I don't care about a Star Wars and I don't care about a racer, but for some reason, like in the arcade, the Pod Racer game is like the best.
Oh, I love
and if I
controller.
Ever see that game, I will go play it, even though I don't play it very well. I will go play it because
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
Do you control it with like the giant joysticks like they do in the movie?
Yes, you do. That's why I like
that's
it.
That's why you like it.
That's
yeah.
why I like it. Yeah, but that wasn't my actual initial answer. My initial answer was Skydancer, which is, you remember how I was all bitter and ranting about like how that's the name of like a kid's toy, like a girly kid's toy, little fairies. Like,
yeah,
it's fucking irritating.
The Endless
yeah,
Runner,
well, anyway,
right?
It's also an Endless Runner game that I actually play a lot, and I don't even like Endless Runner games as a general rule. I've tried a few of them and just not really been into them, and for some reason I keep playing this one, so I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fun, it's good, it's free, it's on mobile, it's easy to boot up and play a little bit, zone out, and then drop it.
Yeah.
So
did you ever beat your score?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Been doing that.
Yeah,
it happens occasionally. Now it's hard, it's slower and harder to do now than nowadays, but yeah.
Tim writes, a few times in my gaming history, I've almost walked away entirely toward other hobbies or pursuits, but twice in my life, there's been a game that brought me back in with ecstatic fervor. Has this ever happened to you? And if so, what were the titles or stories that brought you back?
Yes, it did happen. For a while, I was in a relationship, and when that relationship ended, the person, the guy I was dating ended up, like we had bought a bunch of game systems and he took the bulk of them with him. And so like when that happened, most of my systems were gone. And I was just like, you know, I don't have people to play games with anymore because the people I hung out with other than the friends that we mutually had were not gamer type people. And so I was like getting into doing fitness and stuff and like nobody I knew played games. So I didn't play games for a very, very long time until I ended up playing Guild Wars, the original, and then making some buddies online and spending some time there playing with people online. And then that led to me getting on Steam, and then that led to co-op, which is how I got back into gaming, generally speaking.
Yeah.
So.
For mine, I kind of stopped playing new stuff around the time I went to college. You know, just because of being distracted by classes and things like that. Like, you know, in the dorms, we did Shadow of the Colossus or Resident Evil 4. Like, that was definitely a thing. I just wasn't getting or playing new stuff. And that continued from, like, 2006 into 2007. And I have a distinct recollection of, like, the first real new game that I was really excited about. It was actually two of them that came out at the same day that happened to me on my birthday. In 2007, Rock Band and Mass Effect came out at like the same time, and like that was the first time I was really just like jazzed to see something new. You know, couldn't be more different games, but like that was a 1-2 punch that kind of like just kickstarted things again for me. So yeah, Rock Band and Mass Effect.
Yeah, I see. Nice. Yeah, I should clarify. I was still playing the games that I already owned. I just wasn't playing anything new either.
That's a thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the desert period for me was on one of the times where my PS3, I think it was at that point, maybe PS4, like died on me just out of the blue. I think it was PS3 at that point. And I basically played nothing until one day I can't even remember why, but I got the PS2 out of the closet, hooked it up, and started playing Hot Shots Golf 3.
Oh, yeah?
And that sucked me right back in. I've been really into it, you know, even before college. And then not thought about the game forever, but it just, you know, that game had sat in the same bag that the PS2 had.
Mm-hmm.
And that did it for me. That got me way back in.
Yeah. Ben?
Cool.
I think the example I can think of is Snake Eater, Metal Gear Solid. I played it first and kind of bounced off of it because, like, I don't think I fully got the controls and, like, didn't know, like, how to play it. And then some of my roommates were playing it, and they, like, showed me, like, some of the different Easter eggs that you could do in the beginning of the game. And I was like, oh, that looks sweet. So I got back into it.
Yeah. It is indeed a good game.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I don't have anything else to add on top of that. Like, that was one of the last games that I played before kind of my drought. So-and-so. Like, that was, what, late 2004, early 2005, I think? Mm-hmm. Or was that 2005? I don't know. Yeah. Here's one that is going to be a little bit complicated, but Ethan writes, would you rather be able to play the beta versions of games that have already been released or the beta versions of games that have yet to be released? So you can only ever play any one thing that is labeled beta. Would you rather be able to look back and see kind of stuff, see development and progress on a game that you already know and love? Or would you exclusively rather be able to play games that are about to come out?
Beta of stuff that's already been out, because you are more likely to find interesting, weird stuff and like not be disappointed because you already know what it became. You know what I'm saying? Like if you play a beta for something that's about to come out, it's kind of like when I played Elder Scrolls Online, the beta, I was not impressed and it was real broken. And I just have not been interested in going back and playing the actual game, you know, now that it's been released for quite some time. And it's just kind of like, I already did some of the quests and I already did other stuff. And I'm just like, it's not sold me, you know?
Yeah. I pretty much want to go with your exact answer for your exact reasons. You stated my answer very clearly.
So I want a question. I have a clarification for this that I want. Like, so you can't play the full game ever with either option, right?
He doesn't say that.
No, he doesn't say that. Nothing in the rule says that a dog can't play a beta.
So
go ahead.
So with the option of you can only play beta games that are already out, does that mean you can also play full games that are already out?
Yeah, you can play full games that are already out.
And if you can only play beta games of games that are yet to come, then you can still play games that are already out?
Yes.
Okay, then I'd rather play... it doesn't really matter. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it's because it's such a fine distinction. That's what makes it a really good question.
I guess I'll say the ones that are already out, because that's a larger library of game and you're not under time constraint for that.
Yes.
Interesting.
Like a black hole. Eventually everything falls into that.
Yes.
See, I think it's a big assumption that a beta for a game that's already out will have any kind of player base to interact with. So if that's built in, that might make it closer. But for me, I'm a look forward kind of guy. So I would rather play the betas of stuff that has not come out yet.
Gotcha. It is a more fleeting high.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's one that is not related to video games. Jason asks, what is your favorite non-Duck Feed podcast?
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. Occasionally people ask about this. For me, it's very difficult to answer because the majority of my podcast listening is now news and politics kind of stuff. And if I name any specific shows, I'm positive somebody will say, wait a minute, you listen to those jackasses?
Yeah.
So I don't feel like poking that hornet's nest. So it's difficult.
The Spartan Up podcast. It is basically a short form podcast run by the Spartan Race people. And they interview not just athletes, but, you know, various business people, entrepreneurs, and other people in general who are successful or have like stories overcoming adversity. And they just ask them for, you know, like something that they wish to impart to a community of people who are all basically trying to find their true north, is the way they usually like to say it. Nice. Finding their purpose, their drive, what motivates them, and things like that. And it's like 20 minutes usually. So it's real short, but it has a lot of good information from a lot of different people, a lot of good insights and stories of how people have overcome or, you know, succeeded where, you know, maybe they failed 100 times before. And I like that kind of a thing. So, you know, it's a nice refresher every week to hear.
Yeah. Sounds very positive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dennis?
Yeah. So I found actual play podcasts for tabletop RPGs when I was looking for like just some improv podcasts. And then that led me down a deep, dark rabbit hole. And right now I would say the favorite podcast and kind of network of stuff is the One Shot Network. The Glass Cannon Network. Listen to a bunch of them. But the Glass Cannon podcast is good. And then I actually support them on Patreon so I can get some of their other stuff. So I guess that's the indicator of what I like best is what I'm willing to put my dollars towards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into it. Cool. Ben, how about you?
If YouTube series counts, then I'll say Red Letter Media. If they don't, then I'll say Doug Loves Movies.
Cool. I think that YouTube series count.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. It is not to the letter of the question, but it is to the spirit. this is going to have to be a little bit of a shorter section. So I want to finish out with one that should be pretty easy and also funny. Roop writes, what mature rated game did you play, which you shouldn't have as a kid?
Oh, that's a good one.
Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah. That was one of mine. did they let you play it at the arcade or did you just have it around the house?
Both.
Nice. Yeah, mine
is in a similar vein. Time Killers.
Oh my god,
is that the local Big Lots?
God, that game traumatized me as a kid. That's one where you can like cut off people's limbs and their heads and stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they had that at our arcade for a little bit. Then they took it away, and I thought it was a nightmare.
I think mine was Duke Nukem. I played that at a young age, and I was scared by like the brain monsters in it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, my parents, like, it was very funny that just, like, you know, we just had this stuff around. Like, I watched Beavis and Butthead, and, you know, we played Mortal Kombat. Like, I remember just, like, one time I was back playing Mortal Kombat, and they had just seen something on the news about it. And they're like, wait a minute, is that what you're playing? I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, Mortal Kombat's a pretty, is the pretty standard answer. The only time I remember being, like, like a little bit of a point of friction, my dad got me a copy of Grand Theft Auto 3 for Christmas the year that it came out. It was 2001, I think. So I would have been 14. And yeah, my mom was like, wait, he got that for you. Like, I wish he would have consulted me about it, but at no point was I ever denied anything that I wanted to consume because it was too, too mature, in quotes. So yeah. How about you, Ben? You said Duke Nukem. I'm sorry. Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for putting those in. We are slowly but surely getting through that background. If you want to participate in these when we put up a question, follow us on Facebook. That is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you have been away the longest, so I'm going to throw it to you first.
Yeah, and you've got all the popular enough. You've got the popular type of game to talk about. Yeah.
The cool person's type of game. Well, yeah. So I'm going to talk about a battle royale game. I'm going to talk about a VR game, and then I'm going to talk about a VR battle royale game. So,
Jesus Christ.
That's like all of it right there.
Hey, Dennis. Hey, Dennis, we don't need SEO consultation, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, we might, but I don't want it. Go ahead. I'm curious. I want to hear how this works for you.
Yeah. So I tried Realm Royale. Someone just name checked it in our co-op and multiplayer channel. And I've gone on record after having kind of burnt myself on Plunkbat and then tried Fortnite once and like, yeah, I'm done touching this. Mm-hmm. But against my better judgment, I just wanted to try it. I heard it was class-based, which was intriguing. Mm-hmm. And it's early alpha, so a chance to get in on something, you know, as it's being formed. And Realm Royale, for some reason, just hits the battle royale genre right where I want it to hit. Like it is, I've really enjoyed it and I'm getting deep into it. The unique things about it is, one, it's class-based, so you get a different set of abilities based on the class that you choose. You don't start out with any of them, but as you find things, you will find your abilities. And then there are forges in the game. So as you find weapons that you don't want or gear that is underleveled for what you found already, you can like disenchant it effectively to get crafting materials, and then go to a forge. And there's like probably 10 plus forges around the gigantic map. And if you're at a forge and you have enough crafting materials, you can make a legendary weapon, a legendary piece of armor, or a legendary class ability. And you can only make one of those things at each forge.
Hmm.
But what it does is in the game where, you know, it kind of behooves you to hunker, or in a genre where it behooves you to hunker in place, that just gives you a reason to always be working towards something. And it gives you kind of like 10 different little mini King of the Hill battles all across the map while the larger kind of circle closing in thing is going on. So it always feels like you're actively pursuing something in the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas in Fortnite and Plunkbat, I felt like I kind of would get to a point and then just stop and hide. No. And be bored. So that's really nice. The other small thing that they do, but it makes a big difference, is when you're kind of loading in, when you're waiting for the kind of ship to go across to start the game, you can see where the first circle is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And in all the other games that I've played, you can't see the first circle until after you've dropped.
Right.
So it gives you that much more agency over where to go. Because I feel like when you can't see the circle, the entirety of your decision depends on the line of the plane going over.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like I've got my maybe two favorite spots and I can either go to it or I cannot. And then I'll just pick one of my other favorite spots, whichever one is closest to the line of the airplane or closest to how far I want to jump from the airplane. With Realm Royale, now you just have that little bit of extra information on, okay, here's all my favorite spots. Here's where they are in relation to the plane flying over. And here's where they are in relation to the first circle.
Mm-hmm.
And that just makes it that much more interesting.
Yeah.
And has kind of made me feel like I have more agency and more control.
Yeah.
So that's Realm Royale. It's a little bit more Overwatch combat than Call of Duty combat in that you've got more HP. The fights are going to go on a little bit longer. You have to deal a little bit more damage to kill someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then the funnest thing about it is that when you die, you don't die. You turn into a chicken. And you have no ability to attack. You can run away and like flutter around. But if you can somehow get away from your attacker and survive for 30 seconds as a chicken, you come back to life as a normal person.
Oh, man.
And there's a little bit of strategy in it as well, because chickens are small enough to jump through some windows that humans can't fit through. So it's this, get ready for it. It's this elaborate game of chicken.
Okay.
to like play around the walls of the house and the windows and to like try to go in and out as this person's chasing around. But I mean, it is a fun experience to be the chicken, and gives you, again, just that little bit of agency when you die. But then it's also as the assailant, the person who won the fight, has led to some frustrating yet hilarious moments of like, just got to kill that fucking chicken. Come on.
If I don't kill this chicken, he's going to get revenge.
Yeah.
Cluckster's revenge.
Yeah. Something like that. So yeah, that's Realm Royale. And I, again, it's, they're also samey, I would have said beforehand. Mm-hmm. And it's all slight differences, but this set of slight differences really does it for me.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of this game until today when they showed it at the PC Gaming show, but the addition of classes seems substantial to me.
Well, it also, it makes playing in squads that much more meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you actually want to have balanced skill sets. And I had the realization earlier today, thinking about the game, that like I'm playing the engineer, which has like turrets and shields and a little bit more tanky grenade launcher kind of character, which is great. But when you're doing solo queue, you don't have many escape mechanics. And if you put down a turret and a shield, you don't really have anyone to flush the person out of cover into your line of fire.
Yeah.
So it's probably not the best class to be playing as for solo queue. So I might try a different class now, but yeah, I've enjoyed my experience with it.
Yeah. Nice.
So that's Realm Royale.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started playing Starblood Arena on PSVR.
Okay.
It's like, you know, everyone's in a little spaceship / hovership kind of deal. And it's basically Ratchet and Clank as an arena shooter. Mm-hmm. Very, very wacky, very cartoony, but very fast paced and completely in 3D, where as often as not, you wind up completely upside down, fighting everyone else at odd angles. And it's very chaotic and fast paced, but very enjoyable.
Nice.
Go ahead.
So I'm curious, what does VR add to this?
That's a great question, actually. It's like a little bit of a pinch of salt on something, you know, it makes it that much better.
Mm-hmm.
So all your aiming is done through, head tracking.
Okay.
And so you're controlling your ship on the X, Y, and Z axis and rolling and everything like that. But to be able to do that maneuverability while completely independently aiming, makes you that much more agile. It makes combat that much more fast paced.
Okay.
Because I think we've probably been trained not to realize how constricting it is that you always need to be completely facing the way that you're shooting. Whereas in this, like your movement is completely independent and your facing is almost completely independent of where you're actually able to fire. So it just allows you to like quickly check behind you. It allows you to quickly kind of slide around and target, and it just gives everything this kind of kinetic feel. Mm-hmm. Fast-paced feel that is awesome. I was also having a conversation with someone that I was playing with about how you would think that this kind of game where you're moving in three dimensions very quickly, you're rolling, you're turning upside down, would be super disorienting and super nausea inducing.
Mm-hmm.
Something about being inside of a ship when you're in VR really helps with nausea.
Yeah. Well, and also the fact that you're probably playing this while seated as well.
Correct. Yep. Yeah. Yes, absolutely true.
Yeah.
So the online multiplayer is pretty much non-existent. If you want to play with other humans, you need to group up, which I was able to do without too much trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an absolute blast. And kind of just a really fun game. Whereas kind of the Riggs Mechanized Combat League game that I was talking about earlier is a bit more serious, a bit more tactical, has a bit more of a sense of weight to it. Mm-hmm. This is just really zippy and fun.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had never heard of this before, but it looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it feels just badass too. Everything in VR feels badass. So, so that's the VR game, the pure VR game.
Okay.
Any questions on Realm Royale or Starblood Arena?
I have a comment that Deadmau5 was playing Realm Royale earlier today.
Oh, cool! Yeah.
Does he stream? Does he stream in his helmet?
No, but he streams like pretty frequently, both him making music and playing games.
Nice.
Yeah, every time I've seen him on, I don't follow him or anything, but every time I've noticed that he's on, it's been to make music. So interesting.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah.
So, but really, Realm Royale is not the battle royale game you should be playing. You should be playing Wreck Royale.
Cool.
So there's a VR game. It's completely free and cross-platform, PSVR, Oculus, you name it. It's out there, and it's literally impossible to give them money right now. Which is interesting. They're in beta stage, and they have a game mode. So it's a bunch of VR games. There's paddleball, there's paintball, there's soccer, there's everything. But they've debuted and have had a ton of success behind a battle royale game in VR. Really cool. It, you know, the whole thing has kind of a Nintendo Wii Fit kind of aesthetic. So your Miis, you essentially create a Mii and run that around the universe. But there's something about being in a VR game and being able to like look at another person that has an avatar. There's like facial expressions while they're talking and everything, that everyone is so damn civil and friendly. It's incredible. Like in the lobbies to start Rec Royale, everyone's like sharing with people like, how do I look at my map? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And no one comes down on them. Everyone's like, oh yeah, it's super confusing. Just grab behind you. Like you're pulling it out of a backpack and you'll be able to see it. And oh, by the way, you know, it responds. So don't worry about throwing it away. And like, everyone's just super duper helpful.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Yeah. Like, it's an incredibly, oh, go ahead.
I hate to make this conjecture because it sounds really fucking elitist, but like, do you think that the higher barrier to entry to getting into VR kind of just makes it so that like, you just don't have people who get in there and wreck shop by being dicks?
Yeah. You know? I think part of it might be that, although I've heard plenty of kids on who I'm sure are playing with their parent system and have no reason to, you know, have any of that understanding.
Right.
I think the other piece of it is just a little bit the VR, and particularly PSVR community in general.
Mm-hmm.
It's not big enough that you can just queue into a multiplayer game and expect to have people to play with. And if you don't like them, then fuck you. I'm just going to go play with another group of people so I can cheat out if I want.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone kind of is like, we're in this together. Like we found some people to play with. Let's play with them. So a lot of people play in groups, and you're kind of like, you're going around and friending people, frequently because you want to have that roster online to actually look up when you mm-hmm. want to play.
Nice.
So I think that habit is built into the VR community to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily need to apply to Rec Royale because there's so many people playing it right now that I've never had to wait long to get into a game at all.
Yeah. A brief clarifying question. How do you spell Rec Royale?
Oh, good question. Rec as in like a rec league. So REC, recreation.
Okay.
And then Rec Room is the actual kind of platform that this game is on. It's a little bit smaller scale by which I mean a lot smaller scale. So it's 16 players per jump. And the map is kind of smaller accordingly, though it still feels very big. So it's kind of it all kind of has the same battle royale feel to it. But games play out a little bit faster because you don't have to chew through 100 people every single time.
Mm-hmm.
Which is actually nice because the whole, you know, adrenaline surge of the battle royale format is jumping in, trying to get a good loadout, and then hopefully seeing that through. And so when you're stuck with just, you know, you've found mediocre gear and it's been long enough that everyone else has probably found better than you,
mm-hmm.
You kind of are put out of your misery fairly quickly. Nice. in Rec Royale. That means you can just jump back in that much faster, which probably makes it easier for everyone to find games, mm-hmm. which is a positive. But the game itself is really immersive. So you jump out, you've got a hang glider, get down. That feels really fun to pilot around. Just flying a hang glider in VR it feels cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then moving around is it was surprising. I reversed on what I like more for movement. So typically I like just the normal running controls, and like a teleportation format is disorienting to me.
Uh-huh.
In this, however, again, you're playing cross-platform. The Oculus Rift has a thumbstick for movement, whereas the PSVR only has like pointing the move in the direction you want to go.
Right.
So if you're doing like a normal walking movement, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage to everyone who's got an Oculus or who's mm-hmm. playing on an Oculus.
Yeah.
So in this game, I've actually been playing a teleport version where you kind of jump around from place to place. That adds a really interesting layer to the game. So one, it puts me on equal footing with people who have an Oculus.
Mm-hmm.
Two, movement as a scarce resource makes the battles that much more interesting because, you know, you can teleport, but then there's a little bit of downtime before your teleport comes back up and you can move again, meaning that you, if you teleport to the wrong place, are just a sitting duck for a couple seconds. So it kind of makes thoughtfulness in how you're moving and kind of keeping a cool head during battles that much more essential.
How does it look to other people when you teleport around?
You see them kind of swoosh from place to place.
Okay.
So I would use the analogy of like Tracer from Overwatch for anyone who's familiar with that.
Okay.
And that's what's worked best for me, and I've had a fair degree of success using that. So teleport is I'm coming around on it.
That's, yeah.
It's good stuff. Otherwise, it's kind of standard battle royale format. Again, being able to peek around corners in VR is really cool. Aiming with a sniper rifle is interesting, because your impulse is to want to put your other hand out to like stabilize, but there's nothing to stabilize. So you're literally, you can like dual wield sniper rifles if you want. It's awesome.
Oh geez, that's ridiculous.
But you can, I found myself kind of like though resting the hand holding the sniper rifle on my offhand just to stabilize. But you're still looking down the scope and taking pot shots from far away.
Yeah.
That feels really good. And I've had some really intense sniper battles combined with that rifle and the teleport mechanic, where you're like, you know, you're zipping from cover to cover and kind of peeking out, taking a shot and leaning back. But because it's teleport and not pure movement, each jump is very tense, because if you pick one place to jump, they pick the other place to jump. You know, either you're going to have the advantage in terms of sight lines or they are. And it was just really, really interesting. So yeah, that's been fun. I still, across every battle royale game I've ever played, have not gotten myself a chicken dinner, or the proverbial chicken dinner. So I'm still waiting for that. But yeah, now I'm playing it on multiple fronts, so it's got to happen at some point. That's what I tell myself anyway.
Yeah.
Kind of get early enough in the alpha that you have the edge.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Any questions on Rec Royale?
No, I never heard of this before.
Mm. Yeah. It's cutesy. When you kill someone, it just says that you hit them. You did not, you know, it's all designed to be kid friendly, which is kind of an interesting thing when you're carrying a rocket launcher.
You know, it's just instead of blowing you to pieces, it hugs you to pieces.
Yeah, it's all, you know, it's all in like the paintball convention, but
yeah,
come on, we know what we're doing here.
Oh,
people.
My God, hugs you to pieces sounds so much worse. Yeah.
Well, that's me.
Cool. I'll do mine, because it's going to be very, very quick. I got Vampire last week.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Nice. So, yeah. I want to hear about this.
Yeah, I've been hearing about it from Mai in the mm-hmm. Slack, but
yeah, it's pretty cool. So I have not gotten a chance to play as much of it as I would like to. So this is very, you know, first person, or very kind of first impressions kind of feel. Played about like 2 hours, I think. Weirdly, the closest analog that I can draw is to Alpha Protocol, actually.
That's interesting.
Both in terms of just kind of the talkiness of the game, like how that factors in, and also like the production values. Like, some if complete 100% polish is a requisite, like, you know, that's a requirement for you when you go into a game, Vampire is probably going to be frustrating to you, just because it is, you know, it's a little ramshackle at places, specifically in the action. But as an open world horror game that is talky, like, I think the Alpha Protocol is the comparison that I would draw to it, and understand that I'm making that as a favorable comparison, because Alpha Protocol owns Bones.
For sure.
Yeah. So you might walk into this thinking that because it is Don't Nod, the people behind Life is Strange, that this is going to be like Life is Strange. That game is really a departure for the studio. This is a little bit closer to Remember Me in terms of being a, you know, an action game, a third person action game. But you are playing
Remember Me is not a favorable comparison for me.
Right, right. You are playing as the vampire, and the entire kind of goal of the game, or kind of the framing that I have seen so far, is like, what kind of vampire are you going to be? You know, and that goes, you know, even down to customization. I did not expect there to be a tech tree in this game. In fact, I really didn't know what to expect when I walked into this, because I kept myself pretty dark on it. However, there is, you know, like an upgrade kind of path where you are selecting, you know, what kind of combat powers you're going to have. And, you know, if you're going to focus on stealth and stuff, the city itself is really cool. I like running around Victorian England. Like, this is the is it Victorian? I don't know. It's like post-World War One. I am ignorant of the classification of what that would be. Yeah, the conversation element is really what sells me on it. Like, it is done as a kind of a radial dialogue selection, a little bit similar to like Mass Effect or, again, Alpha Protocol. With the idea being that as you're going around and talking with people, you're establishing these relationships with them, and you're also getting hints and factoids and almost putting together an investigation in order to get more, you know, information about how to progress the story and solve these little side missions and things. And as you unlock hints for individual people, the quality of their blood gets better. Which is, which is weird,
yeah.
but the idea, you know, it doesn't make sense narratively. But the idea being that, like, as you establish, like, you're basically like grooming them to be a better acquisition.
Makes perfect sense. Don't you see?
Yeah.
Don't you see?
I do.
If you make bad discussion choices, you'll have bad blood with them.
Oh, okay.
I was hoping they would have like a leech system, so like you collect leeches, and then when you kill someone, you just throw a bunch on, and you're like, "All right, they're getting all the bad blood, so I can get the good stuff."
I accidentally ate a rat, or you know, like fed off of a rat, and it was very funny. Like my guy was like, "Oh my god, I can't believe I'm doing this." He's just so disgusted with himself.
A very interesting mechanic in games is where characters will comment on how out of character what you're doing is.
I mean, like, this is all like, you know, who knows if this changes, but like, I'm still in the portion of the game where everything about being a vampire is new to the main character. So even that was kind of like, I don't understand why my body wants this rat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, what Mai had said was that with those conversations that you have to make that blood more valuable from the people that you intend to eat, basically drain of blood, whatever, they really make it to where you feel like crap for doing it as a player, because, you know, like she had an example of a guy who's wife had died, and like he was the only breadwinner for the children, and he was writing a letter to them like, once daddy's arm is fixed at the hospital, you know, I'll come back and I'll work, and this neighbor will probably give you some money, he won't, you know, refuse you for that, but I'll try to come back so I can work so we can eat again, you know, and stuff like that. And then, like, you know, you would be killing the father, which would thereby also, you know, more or less kill his kids. So
yeah, that's a sad story. Slurp.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is interesting to play a game where you are a vampire, where everybody else is not just a, you know, a feedback for you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very curious. I'm curious about how it shakes out if you go good vampire, bad vampire, or things in between. Man, I just want to play more of this. It's a really neat game.
Do you think you would play it through multiple times to see both sides, or are you kind of, is it the type of game where you're like, okay, I got my story from this, I got my version of this, and I feel satisfied with that?
I probably wouldn't play it again right away, because I just don't really do that, but I could see myself coming back later to see what the extremes are.
Cool.
Yeah.
Is it just like a kind of like 2-point scale, like Knights of the Republic, in terms of good vampire, bad vampire, or is it any more complicated than that?
As far as I can tell, there's no straight up like, hey, this is where you're at, you know, good or bad. I think it is more relational.
Okay.
Than that, which is good. That may be an interface element that I just haven't noticed.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that's Vampire. I don't know that I have anything more to say about that besides the fact that I feel good that I wasn't just looking forward to this game for years for it to be really bad.
Yeah.
It's always a relief, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's mine. Jala, I'm curious what you've been up to.
Oh, Okay. Well, last time I talked about, I think I might go play Hakuoki Kyoto Winds. Well, I actually did go play the game that I said I was going to play. That doesn't always happen. Most of the time that doesn't happen. So wild card, I actually did the thing I said. So I talked about the original Hakuoki a few years ago. I want to say it was, 2015 when I played it the first time around. And I will talk about it as if I've never talked about it before, just because it's been years since then. So we've kind of picked up some people. they don't know that about this game. So it's a popular visual novel. It's classified as an otome game, although that is more like the vehicle by which you travel through the story rather than being the main focus. It was
you might need
released...
to define otome game for people who may not be aware of what that shorthand for.
An otome game is basically a game where you play a female protagonist and there are a bunch of male protagonists, and you can have romances with them as like a part of the story. In this game, it's very easy to not be like, the first time I played through, I died miserable and alone and everybody else died and it was terrible. Like the whole story is blood and guts and gore and war and everything. So like, although the storyline is fed through, basically which characters you decide you want to spend, you know, more of your time with, it's really like most of the story is focused on the war that goes on and the characters and their politics and everything. And I'll explain more of that in a second. Just a little bit more about the release though, and what this is versus the game I played before. This game was originally released, want to say it was 2007, 2008. And this Hakuoki Kyoto Winds is part of a two-part revamped version that was released. Kyoto Winds was released last spring, and then the second game, Edo Blossoms, just came out this March. So I purchased Kyoto Winds, but I wasn't like hot to play it right away because I knew it was a two-part game and that I'd have to wait to finish out the rest of the story. So I only just recently started playing the first of the games. I do not own Edo Blossoms, so that means that I cannot finish, you know, out any of the stories. Like the stories literally stop halfway through the end of Kyoto Winds, and you have to pick up the other one to continue the story. So
it's like a Destiny game.
Well, it's kind of funny because, like, say for example, other games that I have, such as Shining Force 3, which has three parts of an overarching story, like there still feels like there's resolution at the end of each of those parts of Shining Force 3. But this game, no, it's just like literally like it stops right before, you know, right when stuff is really starting to amp up in the war and there's a lot of stuff going on, and like, you know, you've made some decisions, some people have died, you know, and stuff like that. And it's like, it's right at like kind of one of the higher notes of this, you know, action in this game. Mm-hmm. And it just stops there.
Oh, geez.
So that sucks. But anyway, the executive producer of the series said that this two-part release includes all of the things that they couldn't implement 7 years ago when it was first released. And that's why, the company refers to it as Hakuoki the way it was originally intended. So, now I'll tell you about the story since I've talked about, you know, release stuff. So basically the story follows Chizuru, who goes to Kyoto to search for her father, who went there on business. And she's attacked by Rasetsu, or Furies, as they're called in English, who are basically kind of like blood crazy vampire berserker type things.
Okay.
And the Shinsengumi, which is, if you don't know from Japanese history, a very important military group, save her, but then they take her into custody for interrogation because the Rasetsu were the result of human experimentation by the Shinsengumi.
Okay.
And they can't let you go because you know about it, and they can't have that information leaked out to the public.
Hmm.
They also then discover that Chizuru is the daughter of a renowned doctor that they are also looking for. And so they decide to keep her alive and then basically also help her search for her father because they also need to find the father. They're not like, they don't want to just like treat her like a some kind of villain because she just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And they have some kind of empathy for her to an extent, but also if you leave, we're going to kill you. Like mm-hmm. if you just, you know, run away, we will hunt you down and kill you. So, the characters in the overarching politics are all fictional retellings of actual events and actual people who lived the civil war being fought between the shogunate and the emperor and the beginnings of westernization, including use of guns later in the game and Western medicine here and there throughout. However, there's also folkloric elements, as per the Rasetsu, which are based on the Rakshasas of Hindu mythology, which are basically a type of bloodthirsty demon, as well as Oni, which are ogres or whatever. I think ogres is, I think, how they're usually translated from
like,
Japan.
Like demons, so, stuff like that.
Yeah, demons, ogres. They're translated different ways. But anyway, the whole story is really bloody, showcases how terrible war is and the pains of the people who love each other, comrades in arms, as well as family members, as well as lovers, who end up as enemies due to differing political beliefs. Like, as the story begins, everybody seems to be on the same page. And then as stuff starts happening, everything kind of starts splintering up and different people go in different directions. And there's a lot going on throughout the story with different layers of narrative, the overarching politics and the war. As I've mentioned, the subplots, which involve your character, Chizuru, and your father, and the human experimentation, and the Oni, and the Rasetsu. And then also just human interactions between not just Chizuru and whoever she ends up with, if anybody, but also just the other characters between each other, the people who have been fighting next to each other and been friends and whatever, you know, comrades in arms for years. Mm-hmm. And so it's a really great story overall. And there are romance options, like I said, but it's really hard to get that to work.
Yeah.
And it's a lot easier to end up at a wrong end, to use a corpse party phrasing. Uh-huh. And even if you get a good end, it still involves the death of at least half the cast. So, like,
right.
You know, even if you're like a quote unquote happy couple, you may be in a really precarious situation at the end of the game, or a bittersweet, or, you know, whatever.
Just a happy, blood-soaked couple.
Of the non-golden ends from Steins Gate are kind of like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I kind of keep emphasizing that because, yes, I have played, like, the super girly dating games off and on if I feel really, like, lonely or something, I guess. But, like, this particular game is really not so much about the dating elements as it is everything else. Like, Chizuru is always second fiddle to the war, to the Shinsengumi, to the politics and, you know, whatever it is that these dudes are doing at the time.
Right.
She's not the focus. You know, she ends up acting as a page and a messenger for the Shinsengumi, and she ends up, you know, playing kind of a supporting role throughout the entire thing herself. So she's not like useless either. Mm-hmm. And she does have her own character. She's not like the super moe cutesy, you know, kind of protagonist that is very often the center of like an otome game where she's just, you know, super sweet and, you know, innocent, doe-eyed type of person. No, Chizuru actually has a strong character herself that I ended up really liking by the end.
Yeah.
So,
like, even though the story, you know, like the actual motion of kind of the bigger forces around her don't necessarily depend on her, you know, she is secondary to a lot of this stuff. Are you like, what's the scale of the stakes for your, you know, personal actions? I mean, like, obviously you are affecting who you end up with because this is part of an Otome game, but like, can you like decide who wins the war?
To a degree, yes, because who you end up closest to, ends up like your actions with that person ends up changing what they do. If you are not in a romantic relationship or close to them as comrade or whatever it is that you are, then their actions will alter depending upon, you know, what you do. And that will sometimes mean that they won't go to a certain place or be in a certain battle, or maybe they will, you know, take one course of action that they otherwise wouldn't have if you just left them alone. And as a result, different people die. And the war goes different ways throughout. I mean, like, the Shinsengumi do not have a pleasant end, no matter which way the story ends up. They end up getting chased down and eradicated and things. However, who lives, who dies, and what manner in which they go down and dissolve or whatever, collapse, changes depending upon what you do. And you end up learning so much more about all of the non-playing characters too. Like, there's a bunch of old dudes that are in the Shinsengumi as well that you learn quite a bit about that you end up really, really liking, like all these other people that you don't even have as romance options or whatever. And, you know, like it's definitely worth it to play through and then also to try to see all the different paths because you see different aspects of all the different characters in doing so in a way that's you wouldn't see if you just did the one path or whatever, you know.
Right.
It's definitely worth it because the characters are engaging enough. They have enough variety to their motives and their inner workings and their interactions with Chizuru to make it, you know, worth your time to check it out.
Yeah.
But like if you're a dude and you're like, I don't want to play some game where I'm a girl and it's romance and stuff, like it's really, yes, there's romance, but like, all right, I finished the first half of the game with one of the characters and he's like still acting like a fool and out there, you know, doing whatever. Like he hasn't even gotten to the point of vaguely pretending that he likes Chizuru at all. And it's halfway through the game. Like, you know, it's like the last quarter of the game when anything romantic happens with anybody, you know, like, you know, and the thing is that Chizuru lives with the Shinsengumi for 4 years before stuff really starts amping up and, you know, going nuts. So like, there's a lot of just development and just time spent with the characters, just learning about them and seeing them interact with each other that, you know, is a lot of fun because the characters are so engaging. But, anyway, what is different about Kyoto Winds versus the earlier version of the game that I played and talked about previously? There are 8 new characters, four of whom you can have a romance with, and most of whom, or maybe even all of whom, are actually based on real people, again, like historical figures that took part in all of the goings-on that are being retold here. And then also 2 of the original cast now also have potential romantic paths. They were pretty boys who were not romanceable before, but now they are. There is also a new set of dialogue options and branching paths for every character, apparently.
Good God.
While some
That's the weirdest expansion pack I've ever heard. Like,
well, while some parts of the game are the same, the entire game has been expanded. There's stuff inserted in different spots. Like it'll be the same, and then suddenly there's a new character, and you're like, what is this? There's a whole new scene that I didn't know about. And then, like, you know, like at the point where Kyoto Winds stops, there's actually some endings you can get which are absolutely terrible, like that were not there before. So also, it seems like there's new music. I know there's a new artist on this, and of course they have to add more art to this visual novel because they've got new scenes and new characters, but it sounds to me like they also have new music in this one as well. So the mechanics, I have to say, this one has got like probably my favorite mechanics for a visual novel to date.
Cool.
It's got quick save and quick load, as well as normal save slots. It has a history screen where you can reread, re-listen to, or rewind back to the scene if you have already, you know, already listened to it and seen it. It has an encyclopedia of terms and characters, so if you don't know anything about the original history, you can still keep stuff kind of straight.
Nice.
It's got a gallery with all the event scenes, movies, and music unlocked during, you know, your playthroughs. It's got a record of service where you can restart a route you've already played from a location in the story of your choice at any of the segments, chapter mark segments.
So it has a flowchart, but it does not demand you use it for timeline purposes?
And you can also set a specific character's romance level when you restart it. So if you want to go back and see the terrible option or the really good option, you can go back and set that before you go to the ending and see the different ending without having to go all the way through the whole game again and pick the other option. Also, when you do go through the game, it highlights in blue all of the options that you have already picked previously, so you can, you know, like, make a choice depending upon which way you want to go.
Right.
And it's also got a quick skip feature that has the ability to slow down. Like, it'll skip through all the stuff you've already seen, and then if you haven't seen the dialogue, it stops and slows back down to normal and lets you progress it yourself. Nice. So it's like the easiest, best mechanics for a visual novel I've seen to date. So I'm down with that. It makes it convenient to play through.
It sounds very conscientiously designed, because as much as I have enjoyed the visual novels that I've played in the past, it is a bummer to go through and do stuff you've done already.
Yeah. Well, I was like, okay, I've already played this. Cause I originally played this game for the first time on mobile. Then I played a version on the PS3 because it had a bunch of extra stories and stuff on it, and played through everything all over again there. And then now I'm playing it again, you know, and it's like, I'm going to play all of it, all of the story all over again. But it's nice to not have to see it. How many times would that be? Like, oh my God. To see the entire story play out for every character on every version that I've played so far. So it's cool. I like the way that they've made these nice concessions to making it convenient for my usage. Mm-hmm. So there are some drawbacks, though. The translation, unfortunately, doesn't seem as accurate as prior versions, but thankfully I can understand a large portion of what's being said in Japanese, so I can suss out what the localization changed. Bulk of what was altered was that somebody saying they want to say something, or
no,
was that somebody?
Was
Okay. but the bulk of what they altered was in service of making the wording feel natural to today's American audience rather than to the original tone, or like to emphasize different characters' traits. Like, Hijikata, the commander, has always sounded really grumpy and pissy and curses a lot, but they made him sound kind of like more crass in this version than he really is, like how he's actually speaking in Japanese. And Okita, who has a cold and analytical and kind of trolling kind of barrier between himself and everybody else, is kind of made to sound way colder than he's actually speaking. And, you know, how he's saying it comes across differently in this translation. Shinpachi, who is a muscle bro, at one point says, "Don't you want to order a slice of this beefcake? I got 2 meaty servings on a plate right here," when the Shinsengumi are like going through a physical exam by a doctor. And I don't remember the exact wording, but at that point he's saying something in Japanese that's more like, "Check out how strong and healthy I am. Look at my muscles," you know?
Like, whoever translated him was very horny.
Yeah, they working designs it.
Yeah, so they took it and they went in a direction with it that's not what they're actually saying. So, I mean, like, the gist is still there, but, like, it's kind of, to me, it's misrepresenting the characters, because how they're speaking in Japanese is not what I'm reading on the screen exactly. Some of them are more affected than others. Like, there are other characters who don't seem to have been changed as much, and I guess it's because they don't speak as dramatically. I don't know. But anyway, like I said, the story in this game cuts off after chapter 5, which is literally half of the game, half of the actual narrative. So if you played it last year when it came out, you'd get to the point where, you know, stuff starts, you know, hitting the fan, and then bam, you'd be left hanging until the next year when they release the other part. So
the next part is just not out yet.
Oh, it is out as of this March. Okay. I was saying that, like, if you had played it previously and before this, or if you picked this game up thinking it was a full game in and of itself, you'd be dead wrong. And then you'd be like, "And now I have to buy another game to see the rest of the story. That sucks. You know, but they've just added so much stuff to the game that they just, you know, especially putting it on the Vita, they don't have, I guess, enough space to put everything in one because everything is so narrated. I don't know. But anyway,
ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. So, but anyway, that being the case, like, I'm still enjoying it. for the most part, like the things that they have done to this game that, you know, like I said, it's ease of use. The ease of use stuff is amazing. I am so happy with the way that this game plays, you know, like, I know that sounds weird for a visual novel because there's not a lot of play involved, but like there's a lot of consideration to the fact that you are going to be wanting to see this, you know, see the different aspects of the story that you can unlock, which means you're going to be playing it over and over, you know?
Yeah. So no, there are absolutely decisions that they can make that result in a kinder experience. That doesn't sound as ridiculous as you thought it did.
Yeah. So I've been talking a while about that. That is all I've got to say for the moment for that. I will mention it again another time when I've played more. But this is the bulk of what I have to say about it right here. Yeah. So, any questions?
I don't know if I have any questions. I mean, this sounds just epic and sprawling. I hate the word epic, but like the description that you have given, that it can't fit on a single, you know, one single Vita release, makes this sound intimidating.
What's the playtime of the game?
I don't know. I have no idea how long it takes to play through. I don't even know how long I've been playing my particular thing because I just don't pay attention to play clocks very much.
Right. Gotcha.
I'm sorry, that would be like a how long to beat question. Go to how long to beat and type it in real quick. But
visual novels are almost always run 20 plus 30 yeah. plus.
So that's one thing I played. I don't know if I have time to talk about the other one.
In the Slack you said you had very, very little to cover with that. So
yeah, I'm mostly gonna complain. All right, so the other thing I've been playing is Persona 4 Dancing All Night. So having played Mind Zero, since I don't have a good dungeon crawler available, I zigged instead of zagged, and I ended up looping back to Persona after a fashion with this game. This is the first time I played a rhythm game, and I've never played one in earnest, and I don't understand why it's on Vita, but that's okay. It's also on PS4 now, but I don't have a PS4. Not that it matters. Right. So. But, like, yeah, this game takes place a month after Persona 4 Golden, and it doesn't really even matter what happened in Persona 4 Golden. The whole point being, like, the characters have tried to go back to their normal lives. Rise, who is, like, a previous idol singer who stepped away from being an idol at the beginning of, you know, the Persona 4 Golden game, has returned to the industry, and she's asked all of her Persona friends to dance with her at the Love Meets Bonds Festival, which really sounds like some kind of BDSM jag, if you ask me. Love Meets Bonds Festival.
Huh.
So, anyway, another idol group called Kanamine's Kitchen has gone missing, and when the gang looks into a rumor about a video that shows an idol singer that has died, you know, that's haunting the studio's website, then they get sucked into the Midnight Stage, which is the rhythm game corollary to the Midnight Channel, which was the, you know, big, you know, other world in Persona 4 Golden. Okay. And somebody is brainwashing Shadows, and for whatever reason, the gang can't beat up the Shadows, like big violence is not allowed, so they have to use the power of song and dance. They have to express feelings to the Shadows to free them. They have to use interpretive dance.
It is ridiculous. Okay. So I've known about this game. It is ridiculous that they have a story for this.
There is a story. I played a quarter of this game, 2 out of the 8 chapters, okay? And it makes my eye leak and my brain ache. And I found out, okay, now why is it my eye leaked? I realized that it's because I'm staring at the screen with furrowed brows, trying to figure out what the fuck I'm looking at. And I'm staring without blinking, then my eye gets dry, and then it just starts leaking. And like, I had to stop the other day because I had a headache. And the story, as you might tell, from my description, is so craptacular that I can't help but laugh, and it's kind of like more Scooby-Doo mystery type crap. It's really Like, wow, what is this thing that is happening? Look at the thing that I just sent to you. This is how Kanamine's Kitchen, the girls, the idol girls, talked about themselves as edible meats.
I saw you post this earlier. Yes, this is very facepalmy.
I'm Tomoe Sayama, your soft lamb. I may be a bit gamey, but one bite and you'll be hooked. And they're all talking about how they're meat. And it's real weird.
Like, jeez.
What in the hell? And then, like, yeah, I have just been like, okay, what is this thing that I am playing right now? But also, it feels real awkward to have your dudes dancing around because, like, you went through this whole game and you were, like, badasses and went around destroying shadows and saving people and stuff in the prior incarnation, but this one is real weird.
Yeah.
Also, it's funny, the main character isn't voiced in Persona 4 Golden, but he has a voice in this game, and his voice actor is the same guy who plays one of the villains in the other game. So, like, I recognize his voice immediately. I'm like, wait, that's one of the villains for Persona 4 Golden, and his voice is the main character's voice. This is really disconcerting. So, yeah, that was...
Do them a favor.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'll talk about the mechanics a little bit, because it actually plays, believe it or not, even though the story is painful, the mechanics is fine. I don't know how this compares to other rhythm games. You'll have to tell me. So there's three types of notes. There's a yellow star note where you push the button once, a purple unison note, which you have to hit two buttons at the same time, and a green hold note that you have to hold on to until the other side of the note hits the outer ring on the screen.
Then the three genders.
Then there's two types of rings that go around, just like a little blue ring called a scratch ring that, you know, like it gives you points or something. But then the other one is a fever ring. And if you get three of those in a row, then you get a dance partner and then your points and stuff go up and your audience approval rating or whatever. The ratings are perfect, great, good, and miss. And like I said, there's an audience meter, and how much they're enjoying it is your meter of whether or not you survive the round and move on. So
like Rock
that's
Band.
Your life bar. So that's it. That's it about the mechanics. It plays fine. I have no problem with how it plays, but boy, does it make my head hurt.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, so Persona 4's music is very good. Is it that music that you're dancing to, or is it like new stuff?
Remixes. It's remixes of the original Persona 4 music. So yeah, the music is fine, but it's just very strange. Just the overall framing is strange.
Yeah, that's too much.
The actual core gameplay is okay. It is okay. So
yeah. Huh.
Yes. And it's just more Scooby-Doo mystery and more of the characters being over the top, and then new characters being even more over the top than the other ones. So
yeah, they definitely shouldn't have done a story on that. Like, it really could have just gone theater rhythm style.
But the thing is that this one was apparently so popular that they made a Persona 3 and a Persona 5 dancing game too.
Huh.
So they made other ones in this spin-off, you know, thread here with other Persona games. So yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna finish playing it, but I don't anticipate anything other than like additional headache and like then some actual rhythm game in there somewhere and some music that I like. But I like, I'm not gonna be totally disappointed. I'm not disappointed in it now as it is, but I'm just like, wow. It's been a while since my brain has hurt this much playing a video game. Okay. So
yeah,
that's all I've got so far.
Okay.
You can expect my Twitter to explode with more commentary.
Of course. Ben, how about you? Round us out.
So I'm going to round us out real quick. I got nothing for this show because I played stuff for the other episode we're going to do.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, that sounds like a plan. Well, we still need to do that. So how does everybody feel about bundling it up?
Buttons.
But
credit.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't have a lot in the way of admin. What I do want to tell everybody is go and follow the DuckFeed Twitter account. So that is, you know, twitter.com/DuckFeedTV. Just do that. I didn't script that out or have it planned.
You got sweet tweets coming down the pike.
Yeah, we got some good stuff in the oven. Yeah. But other than that, you know, the usual stuff you can do, please, help spread the word about the show and, check out the other stuff on the network too. I was distracted here for just a moment. They showed the Resident Evil 2 remake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saw that. Yep.
So I am beside myself.
You've held it together well.
Yes. Yeah. I'm paying attention to the show. It's just out of the corner of my eye. Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
I'm Jalachan in all the places I can be found.
And I've been Leon Kennedy. Ben Merkel at Merkel.
I knew it. Stick around for some titles. I only have one. They have to serve them. about how battles are resolved.
I've got three.
Okay.
So Cluckster's Last Stand. Hug Them to Pieces. And then this one kind of relies on the inflection, but sad story, slurp.
Aw, comma, sad story. Slurp, and slurp has has three R's.
Yes,
no, four R's. Four R's, I think, is funnier.
I like that. Yeah. I don't have any titles because I'm terrible today.
That's fine. There's almost always one of us, one of us who does that. Ben,
I just had Hug Them to Pieces, but I like slurp better.
Okay,
yeah, I like slurp better too.
Cool. Oh, that's weird. Sorry, I just I've got this open on another monitor that Death Stranding, part of the Death Stranding, just features straight up a baby in a birth canal giving you a thumbs up.
I'm watching the Kingdom Hearts preview. What are we talking about?
I also see the Death Stranding, but I think it's inside of his ear, right? Or part of Norman Reedus.
It's in there rooting around. So I like Aw, Sad Story, Slurp. So, okay, we're on the air right now, and we're going to be off the air after this.